Welcome back to Generations. That's the name of this podcast, and I am one of your hosts on this podcast called Generations, Peter Jones.
And I am your other co-host of this podcast. That is called Generations. That is this podcast.
Thank Aubrey you. Jones. Thank you, Aubrey, for making sure it is clear to all our listeners and most importantly to me that we are recording a podcast called Generations.
This is, in fact, called Generations.
How the heck have you been, Aubrey?
You know, I've been okay. Things are really, really snowballing in my world over here. It is now, you know, April, beginning of April, which means finals are in a couple weeks, final projects are in full swing, and I graduate in less than a month.
That is exciting and wild all at the same time.
Yes. Yep, and, you know, wedding planning things and work is a little crazy and everything is just kind of snowballing, but considering everything I've been okay. How have you been?
good. I have also been okay. I had the week of spring break off. Your brother was recovering from having his wisdom teeth removed. I was recovering from having my scrotum operated on.
Right.
But it actually went really well. And I, you know, just had a nice week off, got some stuff done. And then this last week at work was actually really good. It was very busy, busy clinic days. But I had a robotic partial nephrectomy on Tuesday that went great. A robotic prostatectomy on Thursday that went great. Bunch of other cases. Good. Just there were days where I was able to go home and feel like, you know, I did a lot of good. So they were good days.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Good. That's awesome.
So tell us a little bit about the last month. I mean, I do have a confession to make. I'm sorry. They called me the other day from the University of Utah to ask me to donate to the parent fund. And they were talking about how, you have a child who's graduating.
And
I was very nice to the guy because I don't want to be a jerk, but I just said to him, I said, hey, buddy, I know what you're doing. And I know that right now you're making small talk, but in a couple of minutes, he didn't actually ever get to the asking to donate. I was like, but I know that why you're calling is to ask me to donate to the parent fund. And I respect that. But between two children, who one graduated, one is graduating, and a wife who recently did graduate school there at out-of-state tuition. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't think you can comprehend how much money I have paid literally out of my pocket to the University of Utah. Right now might not be the best time to ask me to pay more. So I declined to donate to the parent fund.
What?
But, you know, I was nice about it.
I'm glad. I'm honestly shocked that you were nice because you had every right not to.
I've been there.
To be fair, it's not like you're giving the money to this guy specifically.
And he's just doing a job. He's just doing his pitching.
Yeah.
And look, I did this job for not very long when I was in undergrad at Utah State. I worked in the Begathon Center for like 3 days until I got another job, and then I could not quit that crap fast enough. But I've been there. I know. And I have donated before. I have donated both to the Utah State University Alumni Fund, and I have donated to the U of U Parent Fund both. You know who I haven't donated to? I haven't donated to Duke, because them bastards got enough money. And I've paid them.
Yeah.
I don't think they need your money. So
I think you gave them enough.
Although at this point, I have given the University of Utah more money. But I gave Duke a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so every time I get the Duke alumni.
And your blood, sweat, and tears.
Like, every time I get the Duke alumni one, that one doesn't even make it into the house. That one just goes, like, I will go out of my way from the mailbox to go around to the side of the house to put it in that trash can. Before, instead of coming in and then looking at it while I'm walking in and putting it in the trash can. But I digress.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. That's super, super fair. Yeah, it's kind of comical that, especially considering the amount of money you've put into the three of us going to the U, that they're like, but hey, there's never
I
too
mean,
much, right?
again, it's just the way these places operate, and who knows? I mean, we look at other institutions of higher learning, and without going too deep into it, because it will just devolve into a curse-filled, litany of rants from both of us that will require either significant editing or an explicit tag on this episode of the podcast. If we talk about this too much, we'll just jump in and we'll say it doesn't take much for certain people to decide that universities should not be funded because of certain things that they are doing that are not legitimate reasons to defund them. But that's okay. We live in a world where oligarchs can rule and people can make demands out of the capriciousness of their hearts that are actually not just not in accordance with the Constitution of the United States, but directly violate it because the party that says they want us to be great again and support the Constitution are the ones actively pissing on the Constitution and then using it to wipe their puckered little booty holes when they're done.
Couldn't have said it better
Anyway,
myself.
so you're almost
Anyways,
done. You're
what were we talking
almost
about?
done. You've got graduation coming up, and then shortly thereafter, we get to go see Spirit Box. That'll be exciting.
Yes. Oh,
That'll be
so
very
excited.
good. I was
So
bummed
excited for that.
Meshuggah and Cannibal Corpse and Carcass were playing in Salt Lake last night. I'm on call. I couldn't make it. Warbringer, Summoning the Lich, and the Legion are playing in Salt Lake tonight. I can't go to that one either. So I'm
Oh.
holding on. Holding on to
Yeah.
Spirit Box that first week of May that we can go and rock it. Plus,
Oh yeah.
I as much as I would like to see Meshuggah sometime before I die, or they call it quits, whichever happens first. Hopefully they'll call it quits before I die. I think I
Yeah.
more want to see Spirit Box live just because, like, the
Yeah.
energy of that band and Courtney in particular, I think is just going to be something else. But we'll find out in a month.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm
Me
so excited.
too.
Looking forward to it.
But let's get into our topic for the day. And this is one that you brought to us. And so I'm going to use that as the excuse for why I am perhaps somewhat ill-prepared. My other defense is I had to go back into the operating room and do surgery today, and it's been a busy day. So, but I've already got some ideas cooking.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us, introduce what your idea was, and then let's let you start.
Okay. Yeah, so I was thinking, I got had a little inspiration just from another randomly on the podcast app, the title of Unexpected Life Lessons. So I figured we could kind of just chat about what is something that we have learned, something that has stuck with us for a while, some sort of life lesson that we have learned from something that you would not have expected to learn it from that circumstance, that person, that situation, whatever. Just something unexpected. In For example, you do something for one reason, you end up learning something completely different from it. So that was kind of my thought. I have a couple stories-ish I can go through. So my first one I'm going to talk about.
Well, why don't you give us, I was gonna say, yeah, give us one, and then I think I got at least one idea to start off, and then we'll go back and forth.
So my first one that I'll talk about is kind of the obvious one that we have talked about on the podcast before, which is why we kind of
Oh,
changed the title
yes.
of the podcast. And it is basically what I learned from working at the hospital for as long as I did and having the experiences that I had. So, of course, I went into that job being a CNA, trying to get patient hours and patient experience because I was pre-med. That was the plan, that was the goal. I was going to stay there for as long as possible. I was expecting to stay there all 4 years of undergrad. And just rack up the patient hours, rack up the patient experience, learn what it's like to work in an inpatient setting, work with doctors, work with other healthcare personnel, hands-on patient experience, like do some real good in the healthcare world. That was all my goal. I learned, and I do want to caveat this by saying I learned so much more than just
No, but this is
this
the
one life lesson
unexpected lesson.
from that
That's,
job.
this is the
But this is the
unexpected lesson.
unexpected. The unexpected lesson was what I learned what I wanted from life, and the lesson was that medicine was not it. Is the short of it. Truly, I was thinking about my lifelong career and, like, 5 year, 10 year, 15 year goal in my life. And I was kind of learning what my priorities were and what I actually cared enough about to put in all this time and money and
Sure.
energy into. And the life of a medical professional, which in my case, I wanted to be a full-blown surgeon, was just not aligned with what I wanted. I did not want to have my career be the number one, like the top priority when it came to me in my relationship with Hayden, because it would be where I got into med school, we would go. It would be where I matched into residency, we would go. And I didn't want that, in addition to the fact I didn't want to be in, I just didn't want to go through the rigorous schooling, that you have to go through. Not that I'm saying I think the schooling should be less rigorous, because I do not think that. I think that you need to, be trained the way that you, whatever. Like, I think there is some positives to it being so difficult, so that not just anyone can go and become a doctor. But I just learned that was not for me. And I learned that seeing that number of just horrible horror stories of the sick kids that I took care of, I just was like, I can't be in this sort of profession. Like, I literally do not have the bucket, the emotional bucket, to handle all of this. It was like there was a hole at the bottom of my bucket, and no matter what I tried to do to fill my bucket, it was just draining, no matter what I did. And maybe it would have been slightly different if I had had a different patient job, but I regret nothing. Like, I don't regret working there, because it obviously taught me the expected and the unexpected life lessons that I learned from it. And but truly, I was actually talking to my best friend about this last night. The thought of me walking into the lobby of the hospital in my gray scrubs at 5:45 a.m. zooming to my unit as fast as I could so I could see what sort of hell was my patient assignment that day. The thought of that literally makes my heart rate spike. Like, right now, I'm like a little clammy thinking about it. And I think those people that I met and the experiences that I had, I think that there are some absolutely amazing, amazing nurses and techs that I was friends with and worked with. And those are the kind of people that should be in the healthcare field. And I just learned I like space better. I like learning about space better. I just learned that was just not what was in my future, and I just didn't enjoy it for obviously many, many reasons. But again, I do not regret anything ever, because I think, like, I am confident enough in my like emergency skills that if someone needed CPR, I would be confident I could do it out in public. I could do CPR, I could give breaths, I could whatever. If someone's having a seizure in public, you bet your ass I know how to handle that. Considering the patient population I had. And yeah, like, those lessons and the things that I experienced, I will always be grateful for and have learned things from. But the unexpected life lesson was I do not want to be in the medical field.
And that's an
That was my
important
lesson.
lesson to learn because, there are people who learn that later in life. And I know I can tell some of these people. And because of the sunk cost fallacy and truly the idea that they have devoted a lot of time and energy and in many cases, because of the way our educational system in America is broken and just becoming more broken. But they've sunk an awful lot of money into that, and they don't feel they have an alternative, but they're miserable. They hate it. And that's sad because, you know, I will tell you, I think I have one of the best jobs in the world. And I'm really glad I feel that way because it is also incredibly difficult. And knowing what I know now, were I to do it again, I would, but only just, only just.
Yeah.
So it's good to figure that out at a time where you can make sure that you are going to be happy with what you're doing.
Yeah. And it was conveniently timed where I was still going to be able to complete my degree in 4 years when I switched, which was also great because I didn't want to have to do, you know, longer than that. And it was a convenient, it was just a good time for me. It was the time, you know, when people are kind of figuring out what they want to do. I mean, I still kind of don't really know what I want to do when I grow up, but it was kind of an early enough time that it didn't cause any issues where I felt like I had already put so much money into it or time or, you know, anything like that. So I really am. I believe everything happened for a reason and it happened when it needed to happen.
That's good. That's good. Well, you know, I'm going to say that the lesson I learned is that two somewhat menial jobs I had when I was younger have made me a dramatically better doctor and surgeon. And that is number one, waiting tables. And number two, being the absolute, like, just lowest of low on the totem pole people at the hospital when I first started working there in undergrad. So from working in the hospital, and this is a lesson that I didn't know that I was going to take away. It gave me good exposure. It made me go the opposite of you. Yes, this is what I want to do. And I was working in the operating room and I knew I wanted to be a surgeon. Though I will say the kind of surgeon I ended up being is completely different from the kind I thought I was going to be, to the point that anytime I tell someone who is in medicine and understands, when I tell them that I thought I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon, do you know what the response is, Aubrey?
What is their response?
Uncontrollable laughter. Because I
really
am absolutely not an orthopedic surgeon. Not even remotely.
Yeah.
And so
I mean, me working with the like three ortho dudes that I worked with just because of the spinal fusion patients, I can understand a little bit why they uncontrollably laugh.
But what I learned is I learned the value of being part of a team. And so when I worked at the hospital in the operating room, I started out as a volunteer, then I got hired. We were technically CNAs, but we were also anesthesia techs. We were the orderlies. We did patient transport. We turned over the operating rooms in between cases. We were the gophers. We were the ultimate, like, you know, it reminds me of The Princess Bride when Buttercup is talking to Wesley and she's like, oh, fetch this for me, farm boy. Fetch this for me, farm boy. And there's that one scene where like she's like, fetch me that pitcher, farm boy. And he actually has to reach past her to get the pitcher because it was closer to her than it was to him. That's what it felt like. We were the like, go do this, go do this. And I'm like, you literally want me to take the thing out of your hands and put it back in your hands in a different shape or position. Like, that's like what it felt like. But I learned that being part of that team and coming in and helping with the turnovers and doing whatever I could do, I will tell you something. Out of almost all of the surgeons in our operating room, do you know whose turnovers? So the turnover is the time in between cases before your next patient is in and ready for you. Do you know whose turnovers are dramatically faster than any other surgeons? Mine. And yours. Do you know why that is, Aubrey?
I think I do. Is it because you help them turn over?
Bingo. So when I finish the case, except on Fridays when I have two rooms and I actually literally have another patient asleep in another room that I need to go to, I don't leave the room until I've helped move the patient off of the OR table, get them out of position, get them off the OR table and onto the stretcher and on their way into recovery. and I will come back and I'll poke my head in. And if the OR bed needs to be made, I'll make the OR bed, or I'll mop the floor, or I'll wipe something down. And I don't have to do that very often. But the fact that I'm willing to do it and that I try and notice when I need to, when there is something that I can do, the OR staff works so much faster and harder for me than almost any other surgeon. I didn't know that that was going
Absolutely.
to be the outcome when I was doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, I did those things for like 3.5, 4 years. And so being back in that
Yeah.
situation, I knew how bad it's, I, because I was there. I know how bad it sucks when you're trying to turn over the room, but you got a lot of things going on. And then the surgeon comes back and the surgeon is yelling at, why isn't my next patient in the room and all this stuff? Like, I know, I've been there. I've been the one getting yelled at. And so I didn't realize that was going to make me that much better. And so there's that one. Now, the other one is the waiting tables. And waiting tables taught me how to smile, and maybe I'll have to put an explicit tag on, but just eat the shit sandwich that you've been handed. Because when you wait tables, you'll have a lot of people who are pleasant, but you're going to have a lot of people who are complete jack wagons. And just like from the classic episode of Scrubs, people are bastard-coated bastards with bastard fillings. And learning how, because as a waiter, I was making $2.13 an hour. So everything I made was off tips, realistically. And so if someone was being a jack wagon and I gave it back to him, I was going to get a bad tip or no tip at all. And so the fact that our livelihood as a young family depended on my ability to still be nice, even when scumbag human beings were being scumbag human beings, has made it so now I can still, when people are scumbags, whether they're other doctors or their patients or their nursing staff or whoever, but I can just smile and deal with it. Now, the good news is I don't have to eat the sandwich as much anymore as I used to, because I'm kind
Yes,
of in
that
charge
is very
most
good.
situations. But I don't react. I can calmly take that in and direct my frustrations elsewhere. And that's made me a better surgeon and a better doctor, because I can interact, because my whole job is interacting with other people. Everything I do is basically customer service of some kind, whether it's patients or their families, or again, the staff in the OR or on the floor or the ER or whatever. And so just being able to deal with the nightmares of customer service with a smile, huge lesson.
No kidding. Well, I do have another one that is kind of a little different. So this one, I'll just tell the story from the beginning and we'll get to the life lesson. So at the beginning of this school year, I drove out with Hayden to St. Louis with his car, with everything that he packs up for the whole summer to help him move in. And then I have a one-way flight back. And it is on Sunday evening so that I can make it back for my classes the next morning, because it was my second week of school, his first week of school. And I'm flying Frontier because the flights are so cheap.
I mean, that's already a bad news right there, unfortunately.
Already is bad. But I'm pretty sure the flight was like 80
Right.
bucks. So I think that's why I
Totally.
did that one. And it's not like I needed like a carry-on or anything, because like I just needed my little personal item. I wasn't going to be there for very long. I think I was there for like 24 hours. It just is so much better to drive with him to St. Louis than have to have him drive away. And we're both just like sobbing and crying and literally screaming and throwing up in my case, because I just have to have him ripped away from me for however long it is until I'm being a little
Sure,
dramatic, but this is how it
totally.
feels. Especially because it was going into our senior year, and I was like, I just want long distance to be done. We're engaged. Why can't we just get married right now? I'm gonna quit school. I'm gonna drop out. Ah! You know, it's all the very big, big emotions. So I had done my share of crying the entire day. I get on this first flight. Of course, it's not direct because Frontier doesn't have a direct from St. Louis to Salt Lake. And I have about a 45-minute layover, which already stresses me out a little bit because it's like 45 minutes until we like depart. So it's like 20 minutes until you board. And I was like, I'm really stressed about this. I'm stressed. I'm gonna like miss the connecting. And the first flight is on time, whatever. We land in Denver and then we proceed to sit in the airplane, taxiing, not really taxiing, just sitting there waiting for the other airplane to move so we can get to our gate. For 45 minutes, we sit in the plane, and I am like anxious and sweating and have been crying the whole flight anyways, so I'm snotty and crying. And this guy next to me is like, he's like, oh, do you have a connecting flight? Because my knee is like bouncing. I'm like sitting up, like ready to like run off the airplane because the timing was just getting closer and closer to when we needed to board and then when we needed to depart and all this stuff. And he was like, they'll hold the plane for you. There's no way you're the only person going to Salt Lake. Like, this is such a common connecting flight. Like, I've had them like hold it for me before. So I'm like, okay. And I'm like frantically texting Hayden because I'm like, I'm gonna miss the flight. I don't know what to do. And I like call over a flight attendant and I was like, hey, is there any way you can like call ahead and ask them to just like wait a few minutes for, I'm sure there's more of us going to Salt Lake tonight. And she literally cuts me off immediately and it's like, we can't do that. And I was like, oh, you can't? Okay. And then I just start crying again because I'm like, okay, great. Well, now nobody can help me and I'm stuck here and I'm, whoa. And when we finally get to the gate, it was like the minute or two when they were supposed to be board, like departed, not doors closed, but like
Sure.
literally departed to Salt Lake. And there's like 8 to 10 of us, I can't remember the exact number, who are all going to Salt Lake. And all of us are like, excuse me, I have a connecting flight. Excuse me, I have a connecting flight, trying to like get to the front of the plane. And so I zoom to the front of the plane to wait for the doors to open so we can freaking zoom off. And the one of the ladies that was in front of me, I was like, hey, sorry, I have a connecting flight to Salt Lake. And she was like, oh, me too. And I was like, okay, I'm not gonna try and get past you. Like, we can both
Yep.
just be in this together. And the one of the girls to the left of us who was still sitting down went to flight tracker and was like, oh, they left
Oh
10 minutes
no.
ago. And I was like, they left 10 minutes ago. They left early. They left
Oh.
early. And of course, then I just I'm like a literal wreck, just like sobbing. And then we are like, the lady in front of me was like, great, I have to take my son to like a dentist appointment in the morning, and I'm the only one who can take him. And I was like, great, I have class at 8:30 in the morning, and I am not gonna be able to make it. It's the second week of school, and awesome. And we all get off the plane, and this lady in front of me, just like stays with me, and she was like, let's go. They're telling us to go to that gate to see what we can do, see if they can rebook us on another flight. Like, maybe there's, for some reason, they're still there and the tracker was wrong. So me and her basically book it down to that gate, and of course they are gone. But then the customer service desk is right across from there, so she was like, okay, let's go. Like, she was just like staying with me. I was literally in so much distress. I could tell she
Sure.
was just being so nice to me. And we go to the customer service desk. The next flight isn't until 6 in the morning, so they book us for the flight, like whatever. And then I'm still freaking out because I'm like, I'm gonna have to stay in this Denver
Yeah.
airport all night. And it was like 10 or 11, I can't remember the exact time. I think it was like 10:30 at that point. And I was like, I'm just gonna have to stay in the creepy Denver airport all night by myself as a woman. Like, that
Sure.
freaks me out. And I was like calling Hayden to see if I could like get a hotel for the night, and Hayden was trying to like look up hotel rates and whatever. And then she was like, wait, I could get point. I think I have points for a hotel room, and like you could just stay with me. And of course, my first thought is like, okay, this is a random stranger. I'm not gonna stay with her. But my gut feeling was like, I think she genuinely is just trying to like extend
Yeah.
kindness to me. And she was like, she found like a hotel. She had points to cover the whole thing. She like shows me the address. She was like, tell your fiance this exact address so he can like make sure he has your location. Like, I promise I'm not a crazy person. Like, we both just want to have like a good night's few hours of sleep before we have to get back here. She was like, we can just take the shuttle together. And like, don't worry, like we're gonna be okay. And so I was like texting Hayden, I'm like, should I just go with this lady? And he was like, if you have a good gut feeling about it, then do it. And I was like, yeah, I think I do. And she's like telling me about her kids and all this stuff. She was just being so kind to me. So we go back to the hotel room. We're like literally in the same room, just like it's like a two queen room, and we sleep just like for a few hours. We go take the shuttle back. We're sitting next to each other on the plane. She was like, if your roommate can't come pick you up in time for class, I'll drive you to class. Like, no worries. We'll try and get you there on time. All this stuff. Just being so kind to me when she did not need to. And we made it. I made it to class. I made it to my first class. Everything was fine. But I was just so astounded that she just was so kind to me. And my life lesson from that was that, like, people don't always suck.
It's true.
People do not always suck. And I still to this day will tell that story and be like, that was my guardian angel or something, because now I'm never gonna see her ever again. But
But you'll never forget
she
her.
popped in. Yes, I literally will never forget her. I remember her name and everything. I remember her husband was texting her and being really mean that she was offering to let me stay with her. I remember that, and I was like, she doesn't deserve for her husband to be treating her like crap right now, because she is being just such an angel to me, so kind. Just was like, we're gonna be okay. I'm gonna take care of you. Don't you worry. I'm gonna get you to class on time. Don't you worry. Like, I will literally never forget that ever in my entire life. And I can only hope that I can try and extend that sort of kindness to other people, because I would have just been stuck sobbing in the Denver airport for another 6 hours if it wasn't for her.
Yeah, that would have been rough. That would have been rough.
So that was one of the biggest ones, where it's just like, I truly believe she was like a guardian
Yeah,
angel. So
absolutely.
yeah,
Well, the other lesson that
that's one of the
I
big
will
ones.
share briefly, and this is a bit of a letdown, so I feel kind of like a chump sharing this one. And you guys were the same, all of you growing up, and you know this. I read a ton as a kid. You guys, we've always read. We read. You guys did the AR thing in middle school and all that, and you were all always like so far ahead of your goals. And I think a lot of that comes from, your mom and I read. And that's the same thing. I read, I read, I read, I read, I read. I was always reading a book. I don't remember if I mentioned it on this podcast, I think I did. But I think one of the things that helped me get into Duke Medical School was because I was reading. Because I got asked that question,
You
what
definitely
was the
have, I
last
think.
book you read? And I pulled out this big fat paperback, Two Green Angel Tower by Tad Williams. And I was like, held it up. I said, this
Here's the
1100
one.
page tome is what I was literally reading while I was waiting to come back here. And then the interviewer, she was like, well, tell me about it. And so I told her about it. But having read so much over the years, I think has dramatically taught me how to communicate. And so I feel I do a very good job of communicating. I can communicate very clearly with my patients, and I think I do a pretty dang good job of not using medical jargon. Like, I will listen to other people talk to patients, and I will think to myself, you're not doing a great job. Like, you should say this differently so that you're not using, like, take out all the medical jargon, like, make this human, make this sound human. So it has both made me a better doctor, but hey, made a huge difference in undergrad. I was able to, for a number of classes, write papers, sometimes with maybe not having read the book, but I was good enough at writing and communicating that I could totally just pull that out of my backside and BS my way through essays that got me A's and even had me like being called to come in and see the teacher because they were impressed at my use of satire and garbage like that. And I mean, it's made it so that, again, I've written three books. I write a lot, and I've not, I mean, I took just the general writing classes in high school and college, but I think just reading so much and reading from a bunch of different authors and, different styles has made it so that I can communicate much more clearly, than had I not. And I look
Certainly.
at people around me who complain about, oh, I hate to talk to other people, or I hate to give presentations, or I hate to write, or I hate to do this. And I swear there's a universal thing. You know what those people aren't doing? They don't read all the time. They just don't. They don't read all the time. So, huge advocate here for reading, whatever, reading all the time, but just read. Constantly have stuff that you're reading, because it will teach us how to think. It will teach us how to communicate. It makes us better speakers. It makes us better writers. And so that was, I think, kind of an unintended consequence of just being a voracious reader with an extremely overactive imagination. So I needed to have some book or story or something that I was reading to kind of help at least channel part of my imagination in that direction. So
No, I'm a huge reader. I'm a big fan of reading.
Oh, I know, and I think you all were.
I'm a big fan of the fact that, like reading, I wholeheartedly agree. I think it just makes, it also is probably what made me a good writer as well, as because I just started reading so much, so often. And I read so fast now. If Hayden and I are reading the same book, like, I will finish it before he, like, gets to chapter two at this point. And I'll be like, oh, like, what page are you on? And he's, like, he's rereading Warbreaker now, because he has, like, the fancy one. And he was like, he said something, he was like, oh, I just got to the part where she realizes Sis Eberron doesn't have a tongue. And I was like, you started reading this in January? And he was like, hey, I just read slow. Like, hey, no judgment, no judgment. But I have two other just little ones, and then we can wrap up. But my, I have a two-parter of one life lesson, I guess, that you reminded me about the AR thing. I remember, so basically what I'm going to say is that failure does in fact open new doors to new things, and failure does teach you things. And the first thing I'll say is I did not do well in organic chemistry when I took that class.
It's an awful class.
Not well at all. And the long and short of it is the fact that I did not do well in that class. And that was a failure in my mind. That opened new doors to realize what I did enjoy that was not chemistry and not organic chemistry and not the path I was going to go on, which is, you know, similar to this was when I was realizing I did not want to be pre-med anymore. So as much as that hurt really bad, because I've always been an overachiever and I've always have wanted to get super good grades, the second that I didn't, I was like, immediately my sense of self-worth is, you know, tanking. But that did teach me that it opened new doors to what I actually wanted to do with my life, which now, you know, space, astrophysics and things. And the second part of that story is, or a different story is, The Hobbit was one of the books I read in fourth grade, which is crazy that I was trying to read The Hobbit in fourth grade, because I was nine and 10 and trying to read The Hobbit and understand what was going on in The Hobbit.
So I'm with you.
Right. And I go to like take the AR test, because that's how you get your points for however many points the book is worth, which that book was worth an insane amount. I don't remember the scaling, but I remember it was insane. And I failed the AR test. And I was like, why did I fail the AR test? It's because I was reading so fast. I was just skimming over things and forgetting things. And so that life lesson was, it is quality over quantity in so many aspects.
It's not just you. I think it's all of us. We all need to remember that.
Like, I did not need to speed through just to say, look, I read The Hobbit and I'm 9 years old. Look how much better I am than everybody else. Like, because I didn't even retain half the information, clearly, because I took the AR test and failed it. So, anyway, those are
Well,
my other little
to
ones.
that, I want to just share something because you made me think of it and I found it and it said exactly what I wanted to say. There's two things. One from our good old friend Brandon Sanderson, Oathbringer, Stormlight Archive Book 3. Failure is the mark of a life well lived. In turn, the only way to live without failure is to be of no use to anyone.
And who said that? Who says that in?
I don't know. It was this just I just have that saved in my Readwise list of things about failure. But then here's the other
That is
one,
a
and
good
this
one.
is my good friend Arnold Schwarzenegger. If you guys haven't figured this out, I'm like, look, I grew up as a kid in the 80s. Arnold Schwarzenegger was like everything to us. He was our hero, he was our idol. You know, he wasn't a great husband. There's some things there, but I think that there's a lot that he does that I appreciate. There's a reason why I'm a member of his pump club community and pay for that because it's great workouts and it's a good community. I got this from one of the lessons through that pump club. He says, "You are going to fail. If you do it right, you will fail over and over throughout your life. Accept it now. Failure is a crucial part of success. No one ever lifted 500 pounds without failing over and over. Don't be afraid of failure. Like discomfort, make failure your friend."
Yeah, that's a
So,
good one too.
anyway, well, do you
Good
have anything else you
stuff.
wanted to share? I do not have any medical stuff because it just hasn't been anything that interesting this week in the medical news. And so much of the news is me just trying to avoid the news because,
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, so I haven't really looked at any news, so I unfortunately do not have a fact for today.
That's okay. I think, you know, we're good. I think we can wrap it up now. Those were some great life lessons and an interesting topic. I appreciated that
Absolutely.
because, you know, that is, I will say this, one of the things that I've really appreciated since the start of this year is I've been really, really pretty rigorous about my journaling habit. I journal actually twice a day, morning and night. I don't think I've ever missed a full day of both. I've had one or two mornings where I missed, and one, I think, evening where I missed. But I'm going to put out a plug for journaling because journaling is a great way to see these life lessons, to take that time to think. Because if we're not reflecting on our lives and what's happening to us and around us, then we can miss these lessons. So, anyway. But you know,
Absolutely.
wrapping up school, it's an exciting time, and soon we'll be able to talk about what it was like to see Spirit Box in concert. But until then, we'll be back in another couple of weeks. And if
Absolutely.
you've got anything to let us hear about or any thoughts or comments, please reach out at feedback@generations.fm, and we'll be back in another 2 weeks.
Sweet, see ya. All right, I am recording.
And I am recording as well. Do I need to turn the
I
gain up a little bit?
believe it
I
is
don't think so.
your turn, I believe.
Okay, I can do that.
Sweet.
Oh, welcome back to the. Never mind. We're going to start that over again.
Just keep this in.
Now I'll do what I've done in other times where I'll like stick it on the end after the little outro music in case people listen.
Blooper
That's
reel.
right. That's what this is like.
Hello,
I just.
blooper reel.
Welcome to Meeting the Guinea. Okay. Again.